Hi, I'm Francesca, a registered nutritional therapist, and you're listening to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast. Welcome. My aim is to bring you down-to-earth, conversational episodes that help you develop a deeper understanding of how your body's changing in your 40s, and most importantly, how you can support yourself throughout this wonderful transitional phase of your life. Join me for my solo episodes and also episodes with guests for fun, fresh, truthful chat on all things health and happiness in your 40s. And now onto the episode. Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast with me, your host, Francesca. So I hope you're all well this week. I'm having a super busy week, but very exciting one. So it's Friday as I record this. And on Monday morning, my partner and I are moving out of our current home where we've been for 12 years. We've been packing everything up this week, surrounded by boxes as we speak, more or less ready to leave on Monday morning. So just a few final things to wrap up over the weekend. So it's very exciting. We're leaving London and heading down to live by the sea in Margate. So very, very excited about that. Okay, so let's get into the topic of today. So I want to talk to you today about thyroid health, and that so many people will blame everything on perimenopause, because rightly so, there's so much more talk and knowledge about perimenopause all over the internet and social media. But I think I've said this in previous episodes, it does sometimes mean that certain symptoms can just get chalked up to being in perimenopause. I'm in my 40s, it must be perimenopause. And whilst it probably is, because perimenopause exacerbates anything that was previously there, so we can technically blame perimenopause, but is there a thyroid imbalance? Because that's the topic of today. There could be other imbalances as well, autoimmunity, you know, whatever else. Today we're talking about thyroid. So is there a thyroid imbalance that was maybe always there previously or has been there for a few years? And because you're in perimenopause, you're experiencing typical perimenopause symptoms, but actually, rather than just chalking them up to perimenopause, potentially it's thyroid and of course a little bit of perimenopause as well. But if we address that underlying cause in the first place, for example, imbalances in your thyroid, it can make then your perimenopause journey so much easier and smoother. Because the message that I'm really passionate about spreading and the work that I do with my clients is, educating them on the fact that if we can tackle any underlying health imbalances, if we can get our nutrition and our lifestyle in really good shape, we can have an easy, smooth perimenopause and then eventual transition into reaching menopause and life post-menopause. We absolutely can. All the horror stories we hear online and see on social media, we can avoid those. We can minimize those experiences if we know the right, you know, if we know what to do. And that is the whole point of this podcast. So hopefully, if you're listening to this episode, you've listened to previous ones and you already know a lot of stuff that can be done to support yourself and you're on board with me. So let's dive in. Symptoms of an underactive or overactive thyroid. So underactive is known as hypothyroidism. Overactive is known as hyperthyroidism. So symptoms of either an underactive or an overactive thyroid can mimic those typical symptoms of perimenopause and vice versa. So therefore, that's why it's no wonder that so many women feel confused or they get misdiagnosed. They basically will go to the doctor and complain about certain symptoms. And again, if it's a certain age, they might say, oh, it's your hormones, it's, you know, your sex hormones, it's perimenopause, and not think about testing thyroid. But we're going to talk in a little bit about the limitations of thyroid testing from your general doctor as well, because that's a really big thing, a really big problem as well. So first, before we get too far in, let me just explain what the thyroid gland is. So the thyroid gland is a very small sort of butterfly shaped gland that sits in your neck just below your Adam's apple. It plays a really big role in controlling your metabolism. So that's basically how your body uses and produces energy. And that in itself impacts so many different body systems. We tend to think of thyroid in terms of metabolism, in terms of weight control. But metabolism refers to so, so many different systems and processes that are occurring, you know, 24/7 in the body. So it affects system-wide so many different aspects of health. Now, that little butterfly-shaped gland mainly makes a hormone called T4, also known as thyroxine. And it also makes a very small amount of a hormone called T3, which stands for triiodothyronine. You can just call it T3. And T3 is the active form that your cells use. T4 is one thing. We need to produce that T4, that thyroxine from the gland, but it needs to be converted into T3. We need T3 because that's the one that does the jobs. It's the ones your cells use to do all the amazing things that having healthy thyroid hormone does. So most of your T3, like I said, a tiny bit of it is made from the thyroid gland, but most of it, the amount that we need to actually for our cells to use, is made by converting that T4, that thyroxine, into T3. And that occurs outside of the thyroid gland. It occurs within other tissues in the body, other parts of the body, like the liver, the gut, and kidneys. So that's where that process is happening. So first of all, the thyroid gland has to make the T4, and then that T4 needs to get converted in these other tissues and other parts of the body into T3. And that process depends on certain nutrients, particularly selenium and zinc, and it can be affected by things like stress, chronic inflammation, and gut health. And that's really important to know, because we tend to, again, think of thyroid in terms of those you know, important nutrients, which are of course very important, but we kind of overlook the fact that if we're super stressed, any compromised gut health, then that's going to be impacting our ability to convert T4 into T3. And we'll talk about the limitations of testing in a moment, but a little clue here is if your doctor is only testing T4 and not T3, you're just not getting the full picture, are you? So you're only being told, yes, your thyroid is fine, it's making enough T4, but that might still mean that you have hypothyroidism because your T4 is not being converted into T3. And then you're going to have the hypothyroid symptoms. So let's now have a look at some of the shared symptoms between thyroid and perimenopause. So heavy or irregular periods, fatigue and low energy, depression, mood swings, irritability, brain fog, memory issues, muscle and joint pain or weakness, aches, gut issues, constipation, hot flushes or increased sweating, trouble sleeping or full-blown insomnia, hair thinning or hair loss, dry skin, dry nails, low libido, low motivation, weight gain, particularly around the middle, that's really difficult to lose no matter what you do. So these are all classic perimenopause symptoms, but they're also common signs of both an underactive and an overactive thyroid. So here we can really see where the waters just get really muddy, and you just, without testing and real comprehensive testing of thyroid, you don't know, you know, is this thyroid? Is it perimenopause? Is it both? The likelihood is if you're in your 40s and your thyroid results do come back, say hypo or hyperthyroidism, it will be both, because you're all also in perimenopause. And then perimenopause, that situation of erratic estrogen and low progesterone, will exacerbate or amplify a thyroid imbalance. So if you're over 40 and you haven't had a full comprehensive thyroid panel done recently, it's really time to get one. And I recommend checking your thyroid at least once a year throughout your 40s and further, so way beyond that as well into postmenopause. As we move from our cycling years, menstrual cycling years, into perimenopause and eventually into postmenopause, those thyroid issues can start to emerge. So maybe never had any thyroid issues before, but as I've mentioned before in this episode and in previous episodes, perimenopause, as we tip into the phase of perimenopause, it can trigger certain imbalances or amplify anything that was pre-existing. I've never had an issue with thyroid, but being 45, it's definitely something I keep an eye on every year, because and even the last one I had in the last few months was absolutely fine. But that doesn't mean that in 6 months' time, 9 months' time, or 12 months' time, that it's still the same. So I'll keep checking for the foreseeable future. So many women are missing an underlying thyroid issue because they assume, oh, it's just hormones, it's just perimenopause. But in reality, as I said, it's often both. So you've got perimenopause worsening thyroid issues, and you've got thyroid dysfunction amplifying perimenopausal symptoms. So it's a two-way street. So as I said as well, in a nutshell, the reason that perimenopause will amplify or even trigger thyroid imbalances is due to declining progesterone, because that impacts thyroid function. The erratic levels of estrogen, its erratic nature, impacts thyroid function as well. And then the fact that declining progesterone and erratic estrogen impacts cortisol, essentially starts to dysregulate cortisol. And that's basically due to stress, and the fact that stress becomes usually more heightened in our 40s. And so that also, the dysregulation of cortisol also plays a huge role in either hyper or hypothyroidism, just general thyroid imbalance. And as I've also said on previous episodes about stress, it doesn't just mean, you know, emotional, mental stress, it's sort of physical stresses as well, like really common, something that batters your thyroid, especially in your 40s, is excessive high intensity workouts. So your HIIT classes, your spin classes, cardio, high intensity cardio, poor sleep, and blood sugar imbalances. These are the biggest things that we see as practitioners, particularly for women in their 40s, that are just battering their thyroid health. And also insulin resistance is another major player. So blood sugar imbalances eventually lead, if they're left unaddressed, eventually leads to insulin resistance. And that's something that we do become, our cells do become more prone to being insulin resistant in our 40s and further, especially post-menopause. And insulin resistance is a huge player in thyroid imbalances. So you can sort of see why it's either a pre-existing thyroid imbalance that gets amplified as we go into perimenopause, or it gets triggered as we go into perimenopause. Research shows that high insulin levels can block the conversion of that T4, that inactive thyroid hormone. So that's the hormone that we make at first. That's the one the thyroid gland makes, but it's inactive. It needs to be converted into T3. And like I said, that isn't really happening from the gland. It's happening in the tissues in the body. And that's your active form. And research is showing that insulin resistance, high levels of insulin basically block that conversion, as does stress and gut issues as well. So again, leading to signs of low thyroid function. Even if your test results look normal, as in your T4 looks normal, we need to see what your T3 is doing. So there's also, I've kind of just run through symptoms that could be either or, perimenopause or thyroid. But then there's some common overlapping symptoms. And we've got symptoms that could be more likely to be a thyroid dysfunction and symptoms that are more likely to be perimenopausal. So the overlapping symptoms would be fatigue, the brain fog, the stubborn or unexplained weight gain that you just can't lose, hair thinning or hair loss, mood changes, particularly anxiety, depression or irritability, dry skin, poor sleep. These are your most common overlapping symptoms. In terms of telling the difference, you know, obviously testing is the way to go. But before we get to that point, here are some clues about where it's more likely to be a thyroid dysfunction. Low energy that lasts all day rather than fluctuating. So if you're just constantly tired, constantly fatigued, that's more likely to be thyroid than simply perimenopause and nothing else. Cold hands and feet when other people aren't cold. Constipation or slow digestion. Puffy face or general swelling. And then clues where it's more pointing towards perimenopause would be irregular or changing menstrual cycles, symptoms that kind of shift month to month with your menstrual cycle, and hot flushes and night sweats. These would point more towards perimenopause itself. So let's talk about why standard thyroid testing that can be limiting. So in the UK and a lot of other countries as well, standard thyroid testing through your GP often includes just two markers, which are TSH, that's thyroid stimulating hormone, and free T4, that's thyroxine. So obviously, looking at these two can provide a general overview of thyroid dysfunction. It can give you some clues, but it definitely doesn't tell the full story. So in my view, what is the point in just getting some clues? You need to get the full story. Those clues, because I guess in a good way, if TSH or T4 are, so if TSH is too high, if T4 is too low, you definitely know there's an issue with thyroid and you can start to dig deeper. But if they're both normal, you don't know that there's not an issue with thyroid and that you need to dig deep. So in my view, it's like, okay, if your GP can do those two, fine, but we still need to dig deeper either way. So I just prefer for people to go the whole hog with a comprehensive panel that we would do privately that has all the markers that we need. And we'll talk about those in a second. So as I said, you know, as I explained, you can still experience symptoms of thyroid dysfunction, even if TSH is normal, T4 is normal, because we do not know what T3 is doing. And there's also other ones we need to know, which I'll explain in a minute. So here's why TSH and T4 is limited. So TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone, it's a signaling hormone, not a thyroid hormone. This isn't coming from that thyroid gland. TSH is produced by the pituitary gland in the brain. And it acts as a signal to tell your thyroid gland to make thyroid hormone. It literally signals down to it and says, make T4, make T4, make T4, you need more T4. But it doesn't measure the actual, this TSH marker in your test doesn't measure the actual levels of that active hormone T3 or how well your body's using them. So this is why you can have a normal TSH, still have suboptimal, below optimal thyroid, and then you've got free T4. So usually you'll see T4 as free T4, which you should, because that helps us, that's a better picture. So free T4 doesn't show the conversion of T4 into the active hormone. It is just telling us how much T4 we've made. That's it. But as I said, we need to convert that into free T3 before that hormone is doing any actual work in the body. T3 is the one that actually powers your metabolism, your energy, and loads of other bodily functions that we need day to day. So if your body isn't converting T4 into T3 efficiently or at all, so maybe due to stress, inflammation, blood sugar imbalances, insulin resistance, nutrient deficiencies, poor sleep, gut health issues, you might feel tired, cold, sluggish, brain foggy, memory issues, even if your TSH and T4 are in range. So then you go away from your GP having been told everything's normal and you are so frustrated and upset. You don't know what to do. Okay, I'll just live with it then because everything's normal. And you just feel completely gaslighted, to be honest, and just frustrated. So then the other issue, as we said, is the missing T3. That is the full picture. We have to know how much of that T4 is being converted into T3. It's impossible to know if your body's producing and converting T3 without testing it. You can't just test T4. So that's often the missing link. So if you can ask your doctor to also include free T3, some practices might, a lot of them don't. But you can try asking, can we have TSH, free T4 and free T3? Explain, you understand that, you know, it needs to be converted into T3 and you want to test all of it and see what they say. Then going a step further, we also have something called reverse T3. So this is actually basically, instead of converting T4 into active T3, the body produces this reverse T3, also known as RT3, which is an inactive form of T3 that basically blocks the action of T3 in the cell at that cellular level. So the T3 would be getting to the cells, you know, trying to do its amazing jobs to provide energy and do the right things for our metabolism and body systems. But this reverse T3 comes along and says, nope, and it literally puts it all in reverse. It blocks it. So that can happen in time. We can have raised levels of reverse T3 in times of stress, chronic illness. And if, you know, it isn't picked up unless it's specifically tested. To my knowledge, there is no GP, like, conventionally trained NHS GP that would test reverse T3. As far as I'm aware, we don't get reverse T3 via the NHS in the UK. It would need to be private testing. So then we have thyroid antibodies. So this is the last piece. This is where we're looking at autoimmunity. So again, we can have normal TSH, normal T4, but we may have antibodies. We may be producing high levels of antibodies towards our thyroid gland. So that's breaking down tissues in the thyroid gland. And if we don't know that that's happening behind the scenes, because TSH and T4 is always normal, that can still be happening behind the scenes. And then one day we may have abnormal TSH and T4, and they may give you thyroxine, for example, as a medication to help increase that levels that you're not making. But we're still not addressing if the underlying reason that you're not making T4 is because of autoimmunity to your thyroid gland, then we're never addressing that. If we're just taking thyroxine. We need to know, is that the reason? And if that's the reason, it's something known as Hashimoto's thyroiditis. That's your autoimmunity to thyroid disease. We can address it. There's so much that we can do through lifestyle, through nutrition, through various supplements. There's so much that can be done. Gut health is a huge part of reducing thyroid antibodies and keeping them at bay in healthy range. There's so much that we can do if we know. So as I said, in my private practice, I'm always using a comprehensive thyroid test to see all of these different things. And the antibodies are so, so important. They can be present, these towards the thyroid gland, they can be present for years before TSH or T4 start to become affected in test results. Years. So we need to be testing. And the two particular ones to be testing for are TPO antibodies and TG antibodies, thyroglobulin antibodies. And you don't need to know exactly what they stand for. You would just ask for TPO antibodies and TG antibodies. The GPs, NHS do test these, but it can be difficult to get them to agree to put them on a testing panel. Again, to my knowledge, it's if there's pre-existing autoimmunity, they might test. But usually it's in my experience with clients, they find it very hard to get their GPs to agree to put these two on. So again, we just do the private panel. It's much easier. Okay, so now let's move on to lifestyle foundations, lifestyle factors that impact thyroid and perimenopausal health, because obviously if you're listening to this, you're likely in the perimenopause phase with me. And then, you know, we want to be supporting both things. So when it comes to supporting thyroid health, especially during perimenopause, we want to start with the foundational lifestyle strategies that nourish our whole system. I've talked about these so many times on previous episodes. So hopefully, by repeating myself and maybe going into different sort of explanations in each episode, it just really helps to like cement things for you. So these particular lifestyle strategies that nourish your whole system, they don't just benefit your thyroid, they also support hormone balance generally, cortisol, estrogen, progesterone, insulin, loads of other hormones, that's testosterone, you know, that are really important for us to be looking after. They'll support energy, they'll support mood, they'll support sleep, and a lot more. So let's start with the non-negotiables. So these are the habits that support both your thyroid and your hormones generally. So blood sugar balance. Again, talked about this on previous episodes. I've got separate episodes on all of the things I'm going to talk about now. So you can scroll through the titles of previous episodes and find those separate episodes. But yes, so blood sugar balance, non-negotiable. Keeping your blood sugar levels stable all across the day is one of the most powerful things that you can do to support thyroid and perimenopause. The most foundational by far. When we have blood sugar swings too high or too low, it simply puts stress on the body, on your entire system. And that stress impacts your thyroid function and your hormone production. It impacts the erratic nature of estrogen. It impacts the levels of progesterone that are already declining, your ability to ovulate and make progesterone. So it's so foundational. It impacts cortisol, impacts insulin. Really, and those are so foundational. Cortisol and insulin are such foundational hormones as well. So essentially, I'm not going to go into loads of detail because there are, like I said, separate episodes where I go into more detail. But for this episode, just to say, protein with every meal. These are the key things for blood sugar balance, especially breakfast. At least 30 grams of protein with every single meal. Avoid skipping meals, especially if you're tired, anxious, wired, if you've had a bad night's sleep. Do not skip your meals. Avoid too long fasts. So avoid waiting till like 11 o'clock to eat your breakfast. It's just going to put too much pressure on your system in your 40s, particularly if you've got an underactive thyroid. So essentially fasting overnight for 12 to 14 hours is ideal. Just don't push it. There's no need to push it any further than that. Fasting overnight for 12 hours or 13 hours or 13 and a half or 14, this is a form of what we call time restricted feeding. And it's really, really beneficial for blood sugar balance, for insulin sensitivity, for body composition, for maintaining your weight, for supporting fat loss. You know, we don't need to take things to extremes or read up on these books about intermittent fasting for women. It doesn't have to be that extreme. We can simply just make sure we have a good 12 hours or anywhere up to 14 between finishing dinner and starting breakfast the next morning. Minimize refined carbohydrates, minimize sugar, anything that kind of causes these blood sugar spikes. Minimize meals, like I said, without protein that are just, even if they're super healthy, it doesn't mean that they're blood sugar friendly. And making sure, of course, that we're including healthy fats and plenty of fiber to slow down that glucose absorption with every meal alongside that protein. So that will help to reduce cortisol spikes that will happen when we have these blood sugar. Once we have a blood sugar swing, we're going to have high insulin, and that's quickly followed by a blood sugar drop, and then we have levels of cortisol because that's a stressor on the body, and therefore the stress hormone cortisol gets released, and it's that that will start suppressing thyroid hormone conversion, that T4 into T3. Also, blood sugar balance just calms mood swings, irritability, headaches, energy crashes throughout the day. It's so, so, so important. Even helps us sleep really well. And then stress management. So absolutely foundational as well. Chronic stress, whether it's emotional, physical, or even from, as I said, over-exercising, it can disrupt your HPA axis. So this is your hypothalamus and pituitary, which are in the brain. That's what the HP stands for. And the adrenal glands is what the A stands for. Axis basically means connection between the brain and the adrenal glands. The adrenal glands are responsible for releasing your stress hormones in response to stress. So chronic stress will disrupt that HPA axis, the brain to adrenal connection, and then slow your thyroid function and slow that. So it will slow the production of T4, but it will also slow or inhibit the conversion of T4 into T3. And also chronic stress worsens perimenopausal symptoms like anxiety, insomnia, fatigue. So this week for me has been particularly stressful, like I said at the beginning, where I've been packing to move. 12 years of my life in one place. We're now packing to move from London, which is the only place I've ever lived, down to the sea. So very, very different lifestyle as well, which I'm very excited for. But it, you know, it's extremely stressful packing up your life. And my symptoms this week, I've had a few hot flushes for the very first time. I've never had a hot flush before. I've had one this week. I've had two. And it's the stress. And I'm waking up at 5 a.m. and my eyes are just wide open and I'm all thinking of all these different things I've got to do. And I'm feeling absolutely wrecked. So, and my memory, I was with a friend this morning, had a quick coffee. And the amount of times I just literally forgot my words. And luckily she's at the same stage as me and she completely understands. But it's just, I've noticed how heightened it all is this week. And it's because of the additional stress I've got going on this week. So essentially, yes, prioritizing rest, not just sleep. Sleep is great. And this is what I've learned and reminded myself of this week. Yes, I'm still managing to have my good night's sleep. I'm still getting to bed early, doing all the nice things before I go to bed that I always do. But my days have just been absolutely manic all week. And that's been really impactful on me negatively. So rest isn't just about your sleep at night. It's about where can you have little rest breaks through the day, even if it's just 3 minutes of doing some deep breathing by yourself. If you can do the 4-6 breathing exercise for a few minutes throughout the day, can you stop and just sit somewhere, preferably in nature, and just sit quietly and mindfully, take some deep breaths? Can you lie on the floor for a bit and just do a quick body scan? And again, some deep breathing. All of these little things fed into your day can be really, really helpful. Swap intense cardio for more gentle movement like yoga, Pilates, strength training. So, so, so helpful and so, so important once we're 40 plus and beyond. Just walking out in nature, especially if you're feeling depleted. So I was supposed to go to the gym this morning for my normal Friday morning session, but I just decided it's not what my body needs this week. It's been an extremely stressful week. I've got a lot going on. I'm doing a lot of lifting in the house anyway with all the boxes that I'm packing. And I thought, I just don't need it. I just don't need it today. I'm feeling so depleted. So I just went for a walk instead in my local common, and I feel so much better for doing that. And then nervous system regulation work, journaling, mindfulness, lots of different tools, somatic experiencing therapy is fantastic. Lots of different things we can explore. And like I said, there's previous episodes where I've talked all about cortisol, stress management. So go back and have a look at those. Circadian rhythm support, number 3. The body is deeply influenced by light in the morning, darkness in the evening and night, and our sleep patterns. So your thyroid and your entire hormone endocrine system literally relies on a well-regulated circadian rhythm to function properly. So that basically means to get into morning daylight exposure within an hour at the most of waking. Ideally get outside for that, not just by a window. So if you've got a balcony, a garden, a patio, a terrace, anywhere that you can step out in the morning. Or if you're like me most mornings, especially now that it's lighter, I just get up. I throw my clothes on and I go straight out for my walk, avoiding bright screens at night, dimming the lights in the evening, wearing blue light blocking glasses if you can, stick to a consistent bedtime and wake up time, even on weekends. It's really, really important that we go to bed and wake up at the same time 7 days a week. If there's, you know, give or take an hour here or there, that's fine. But if it's completely disrupted, that's not helpful. Sleep is when your body does most of its hormone repair work. So prioritizing it, you know, having these little simple morning daylight and in the morning, and then darkness, dim lights, avoiding screens in at least for an hour before bed, putting your phone away or, you know, your tablets away and your TV. Then nutrient-rich diet. So nutrients are literally the building blocks for thyroid hormone production and for our metabolism. So focusing on real whole foods. We hear this all the time. It can be a bit of a cliche, real foods, whole foods, but we basically mean real food, essentially, like high quality proteins, so eggs, fish, chicken, turkey, quality red meat, beans, lentils. They're basically more carbohydrate, but they can give you some protein if you mix them with other things. Soy-based protein, but non-processed soy, so edamame, tofu, tempeh, and then lots of healthy fats. So this is literally providing, again, raw materials, building blocks for us to be able to make that thyroid hormone. So olive oil, nuts, seeds, oily fish, salmon, mackerel, sardines, herring, trout, avocado, real butter, not margarine, colorful vegetables for fiber, all your different colors, types of vegetables, berries. You get plenty of antioxidants and minerals as well from your colorful vegetables and your dark green leafy veg. Slow release carbohydrates. So these are also known as complex carbs. So that's things like root vegetables, quinoa, brown rice, buckwheat, sweet potato, and just no more than one closed fist size portion of carbohydrates on a plate with plenty of colorful vegetables for your fiber, some healthy fats, and your quality protein. Nutrients that specifically support thyroid health are zinc, selenium, iodine, tyrosine, which is basically an amino acid found in protein foods. So the clue there is that protein is really, really important for thyroid health. Iron, vitamins A, vitamin D, vitamin B12, and also magnesium. So selenium is particularly required for the conversion of T4 into T3. Things like Brazil nuts are rich in selenium, eggs, fish, sunflower seeds. Some people need to supplement, really depends. Zinc is important for thyroid hormone production. That, again, that conversion of T4 into T3 as well. Low zinc can contribute to hair loss, mood issues, sluggish thyroid. And we really get lovely amounts of zinc from quality red meat, fish, legumes, so beans and pulses, pumpkin seeds. But your richest sources are your animal products, really. Caution with iodine, but we do need iodine. Again, it's great if I wouldn't advise anyone to supplement with iodine unless you're working with a practitioner like myself or someone who's qualified, like, you know, nutritional therapy or functional medicine, just because we don't always know if it's going to be more unhelpful, because too much iodine can trigger or worsen thyroid autoimmunity. So it's best that we're just sort of getting it from food and we're not just willy-nilly like supplementing with it without testing our antibodies. If we want to supplement with it, we should test our antibodies first to make sure there's no issues there. So food sources would be things like seaweed, like nori or wakame, fish, dairy, iodized sea salt. Iron, vitamin D, B vitamins, tyrosine, magnesium, they all support different aspects of thyroid function and hormone balance, perimenopause. So these are just wonderful to make sure that, you know, we're just eating enough foods rich in all of these nutrients. And if we do need to supplement, perimenopause is usually a time where women do need to supplement, particularly with vitamin D, with B vitamins, with magnesium, zinc potentially as well. And then the gut health has a big role in thyroid function as well. So, you know, you cannot talk about thyroid health without addressing or talking about the gut. So about around 20% of your T4, your thyroxine, is converted into that T3, the active hormone, in the gut. Now, if your microbiome, so your gut flora, the beneficial, the sort of balance of bacteria in your gut is imbalanced, or, you know, if you don't have good levels of beneficial bacteria, if you've got any sort of infection in the gut, if you've got yeast infections, anything like that, or you have just generally poor digestion, constipation, that conversion from T4 into T3 is impaired, very likely impaired. A healthy gut lining as well is important because that helps to regulate the immune system, which is really important if you are someone who is dealing with autoimmune thyroid issues like Hashimoto's that I mentioned earlier. So this is where if somebody is diagnosed with Hashimoto's, they have high levels of those two antibodies I mentioned earlier. Working with the gut lining is really, really important. Getting that as optimally healthy as we possibly can is really supportive of then retesting 6 months later and seeing those autoimmune antibodies coming down. And lots of all the other things that we've talked about here as well are helpful. Nutrient absorption happens in the gut as well. So even a really perfect diet won't help you if you're not properly breaking down your food, digesting and absorbing your nutrients properly. So make sure you're chewing every mouthful really well. You might need digestive enzymes to support you. Don't be eating on the go, in a rush, when stressed, because that really does impact nutrient absorption. So Other helpful testing that we might consider in perimenopause alongside thyroid is estrogen, progesterone, testosterone can be helpful, but timing really matters because obviously during perimenopause, estrogen, it's natural that it's erratically fluctuating. So we might test on one day, and just because it's low doesn't necessarily mean it's always low. It could just have been low at the time of testing, and vice versa if it was really high. So it's not always the most helpful. But progesterone is quite helpful to test because if you test around day 21, if you have, say, a 28-day cycle, the average cycle, you would be testing progesterone around day 21 of your cycle. Or if you don't have the average 28-day cycle, which you probably don't if you're in perimenopause, then you want to just test that progesterone about 7 days after ovulation if you have a rough idea when that would be. If progesterone is low in that test, you know on that particular month you probably didn't ovulate and didn't make progesterone, or you did. So if you don't have any progesterone, it would suggest you didn't ovulate because you didn't make any. If you do have some progesterone but it's low, it would suggest that you did ovulate but you didn't make much. So that's helpful. But estrogen, it's a bit funny to test. I use the Dutch test, really, really helpful for perimenopause, because not only do you get levels of estrogen on that day, but you also get to look at the metabolism of estrogen, which I won't go into now because that's a whole other topic. But I have touched on it in previous episodes, the one about estrogen detoxification. So what's really helpful as well is blood sugar markers, insulin markers. So looking at fasting glucose, fasting insulin, HbA1c, which gives you a 3-month average of blood sugar levels, using a continuous glucose monitor, CGM, can be really eye-opening if you want to get nerdy. I really enjoy using them, like, to get these really helpful insights into what, you know, spikes your blood sugar and how long it stays up for and so on. Other markers that are really helpful as well and important: total cholesterol, LDL, HDL cholesterol, triglycerides, ALT, which is a liver marker, but it can actually suggest things like insulin resistance. ESR and CRP are your inflammation markers. Really helpful to have these markers during perimenopause and beyond, alongside your thyroid testing. Cortisol and adrenal function testing as well. If you're dealing with fatigue, low energy, that sort of wired but tired energy at night, insomnia, anxiety, it is worth looking at your cortisol levels and the rhythm of it as well. And it should also, any sort of cortisol and adrenal testing should also include something called the cortisol awakening response, which is called also known as the CAR, which is like a mini stress test. It's really impactful on daytime energy and sleep quality and, you know, overall other aspects of health, has a downstream effect. So I like to do cortisol and adrenal function by saliva testing. It's known as a 4-point throughout the day saliva test. I personally use the Dutch test. Dutch stands for dried urine test, comprehensive hormones. And that also looks at hormone sort of breakdown products, metabolites of your cortisol. So you get a really big picture. I use the Dutch Plus. It's a fantastic test that looks at how you're breaking down your estrogen, which is another really important thing to look at that I just mentioned, but I won't go into in detail today. But it also gives you a really comprehensive cortisol adrenal picture as well. It helps us to understand if your stress response is overactive, if it's flatlined, if it's somewhere in between. And that can be really impacting your thyroid, your hormones, your energy, and your entire perimenopause experience. And then nutrients, I like to look at are vitamin D, ferritin, which is iron storage, and iron as well. Active B12, folate, magnesium via red blood cell, magnesium if possible, and zinc if possible. So if you're vegetarian or you're vegan or you have heavy periods, testing iron is especially important. Iron is, heme iron is the form of iron that we actually use in the body, and that's just rich in animal food. So if we're not eating animal products, it's really important that we're testing regularly. Like I said, if you have heavy periods, really important you're testing your iron. Now, you don't need all these tests, but if something's not adding up, or you're just not feeling with standard testing and you're just frustrated, you're walking away off, you know, being told everything's normal, this testing can provide answers and a clearer path forward. So it just gives you that insight. So, okay, there is imbalances here. I can sort these. I can work on these. So in my practice, some clients have the budget for testing, some don't. If they don't have budget for testing, we try and get what we can from the GP, but it is, like I say, quite limited, but we can still get some things to work with. And then if they just don't have the budget for the private testing, there's so much we can still work with. Once I get your full case history in this lengthy form that clients to fill out before I start working with them, there's so much that I can pinpoint just from going through this intake form before testing. Testing is very helpful if there's budget there for it. It's fantastic to add that on. But if even if there isn't, it's all is not lost at all. There's so much that, you know, I can sort of put the pieces together from just looking at a person's case. And then, you know, giving them various nutrition, lifestyle, supplement, guidance, exercise as well. And it can really help transform how a person feels. I always say testing is a tool. It's not the whole story. We use it to guide our support, not to label or sort of limit, you know, or put somebody in a box. Oh, you've got this, so we need to do this. There's not just one protocol that fits all based on a certain test result. It's, it just gives a bigger picture to that, you know, to that person's case. So if you would like, as we're going to finish now, if you would like one-to-one support from me with your thyroid health, with your perimenopause journey, or just generally anything that I've talked about or do talk about, I am here to support you. There's a link in the show notes to book a discovery call with me where we can chat through what you're struggling with, see how I might be able to help you, see if we're a good fit for each other. And then we can sort of go from there as to, you know, what we decide. So the link in the show notes, or you can go to my website, francescaliparotti.com, and you can see all the ways to work with me, and you can book your discovery call through there as well. So I hope today has been helpful. As ever, any questions, drop me a line, drop me an email. Contact me on Instagram. I'd really love to hear from you. Feedback is really, really helpful. So please do get in touch if you've got anything to ask, anything to say, anything to share. I'd love to hear from you. All right, I'll see you next time. Bye-bye. If you found this episode helpful, then please share it with anyone else who you think could benefit. And consider leaving a rating and a review, as this will help the podcast to reach and help more people. And if you need more guidance on your own health journey, you can grab my free guide, 6 Steps to Mastering Your Hormones in Your 40s, over at francescaliparotti.com, where you can sign up for your free copy. Or you'll also find the link in the show notes.